At the CURB annual meeting, I'm visiting with two of my compatriots here in the ag media, and I've got Jerry Hagstrom and Sarah Wyatt. What I wanted to do was, since you've had a chance to talk with some of the folks here, hear some of the, I thought, some pretty interesting presentations this morning, just a couple of your takeaways that you've heard that kind of stood out for being here, and whoever wants to can start.
Well, I think that this is a tremendous meeting in terms of getting caught up on everything that's happening with the crop insurance industry from the company and the reinsurance companies that are involved and the industry experts that are here to talk about it. As we all know from talking to farmers around the country, crop insurance is a very, very important risk management tool, and farmers have come to rely on that instead of ad hoc disaster payments. And I think that's been a good thing, both from a taxpayer standpoint as well as a farmer standpoint. But the last farm bill that now has just been under our belts for a year certainly increased the investment in crop insurance, and it also increased the opportunity for critics of federal spending in this area to go after crop insurance. And so I think the fact that crop insurance will continue to have a bullseye on its back is very evident in these discussions.
Yeah, I think we heard that from Mary Kay pretty clearly today. How about you, Jerry?
Well, I was also very interested in what Mary Kay Thatcher from the American Farm Bureau Federation had to say, particularly that she does think that there will be challenges to crop insurance this year, even if you have a lot of support from the House and Senate Agriculture Committees for the program. She particularly noted that if the committees do attempt to cut the food stamp program, that will bring about calls to cut crop insurance as an issue of fairness. If you're going to take food away from children, then why shouldn't you cut the subsidies somewhat to farmers? Mary Kay also noted that that she thinks that the focus will stay on crop insurance, even though the spending for crop insurance may go down with the value of crops going down, and the spending on the commodity title may go up. But she said that the crop insurance program is kind of an easier bullseye because it's easier to understand, perhaps a percentage cut. The other thing I thought was interesting that she said is that if there's a cut this time, she thinks it's the farmers who will take the hit, not the crop insurance companies. In the past, there have been cuts to the spending for administrative and operating expenses, but nobody has proposed that this year.
Before we close, I thought we had an interesting presentation on climate from a historical viewpoint from a climatologist here. Anything you kind of took away from that you found maybe like an I had no idea kind of thing?
Well, she provides a very historical perspective on the changes in climate and raises a lot of issues that the typical person who's talking about climate change, I don't think, appreciates. So from that perspective, it was a very good overview of all the different factors involved, from volcanic activities to, you know, La Nina, El Nino, all those different factors. So it just underscores to me the fact that we need to have a multifaceted discussion when we talk about climate change instead of having it all one very simple explanation.
It seems to me like, as I was listening through this morning, since I'm not a crop insurance expert, the weather's about as complicated an issue as crop insurance is, at least to me.
Yes, but honestly, my takeaway from the very lengthy discussion, and some of it going back to 1800 or 800, and also how you can judge, climatic or weather change from the places in which the Scandinavians are able to get herring out of the Atlantic Ocean. I still came away with the same conclusion that at the present time we are in a period of warming weather, and a lot of the same dangers that she cited, for example, the the increased vulnerability of homes that are located next to national forests at a time when the forests are have been burning. We've come back with the same problems. It's just a matter of which kind of language you're using to talk about it. I am reminded that somebody said to me recently that a lot of farmers seem to be climate change deniers. But they wouldn't be climate change deniers if people were not asking them to make changes. It's the changes that they don't want, and if you get them away from that conversation, they will acknowledge that the world or wherever they're living is getting warmer. It's just that the proposed changes would cause such dramatic changes in their own work environments that they're very nervous about making the kinds of changes that have been proposed.
I think almost anybody in any kind of business is today because of the economic possibilities with a lot of the suggestions, I guess, that are being proposed out there.
Well, it kind of comes back to this whole thing of risk management and the increased variability, not only in climatic change, but in looking at all the opportunities with yield. We also had a presentation about world supply and demand situation that underscores the fact that as we continue to grow towards 9.5 billion by 2030, the dramatic increases that we're going to need in corn and soybeans and palm oil. And you saw the dramatic uptake that was represented on some of the charts today. And if we can't do that in a way that allows people to manage their risk and protect their investments, we're not going to be able to feed this growing, hungry planet that is going to demand a lot more protein.
Well, I want to thank both of you for just taking a couple minutes to visit. I thought it might be interesting to hear some of the perspectives that we're all taking away from this meeting here. So from the CURB annual meeting, I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.